This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And now, it's time for the Prop Swap post-game show with Score senior football expert Hub Arkish and former Bears long-snapping Iron Man Patrick Manley on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by PNC Bank, the official bank of the Chicago Bears.
Welcome in, everyone, to our Prop Swap post-game show presented by PNC Bank. I am Hub Arkish, along with Patrick Manley, and it is over. The Chicago Bears fall 21-9 to the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. It was ugly a good part of the afternoon. Actually, in many respects, the Bears' defense somewhat heroic for three quarters, but for the most part, just a sloppy mess of a football game. I don't think either team is going to be overly proud of what they put on tape today. That remains to be seen. And the Bears were in it. They hung in for three quarters. It was 14-3 with a few minutes left in the third quarter. 7-3 until 4 minutes until 10 minutes into the third quarter. But at the end of the day, you just never really felt like the Bears had much of a chance. Patrick, we're going to bring in Mully in just a second, but any quick opening thoughts from you before we get to Mully and then go to the phone lines?
Yeah, I think us as fans were reminded who the Bears really are the last few weeks. I think those 3 weeks where they played the teams they did that really were struggling, didn't have any talent, it made us, you know, maybe it made me a little bit get excited that maybe they're turning the corner. But when you play two teams like the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints and you play like you do, that just reminds you about that six-game losing streak that went on during the middle of the season, and you realize the issues that the Bears have.
All right, Pat, we are joined every week on our Prop Swap post-game show by Mike Mulligan. Mully, of course, half of the Mully and Haw show every morning, weekdays in drive time from 5 to 9. And Mike, welcome in. You know, it's funny because there were some things to feel good about in the first half, but I don't know, I never really felt good about it. And then for the better part of the second half, I think a lot of what we expected and certainly frustrating, and I'm not sure where to take it after that.
Yeah, I mean, it's beyond frustrating. I think when you watch a team that manages, no first downs, no third down conversions until the final gasp of the game. That's ugly beyond ugly. I get it. They had the gimmick play, great play design, where Javon Wims drops a pass in the end zone. But is that the only way you can score points? You can't help but wonder. I mean, I think that Patrick hit it right on the dot. I think that we were led to believe that this four-game 30-point streak, there was some new thing they had discovered. They, you know, moving forward, they've got Mitch and they've got the offense, and now everything's fixed. And clearly, that's not the case when you're against a good defense. I think 16 points a week ago, and do we credit him with 9? Is that how it works? I just thought that was pretty ugly.
Yeah, to me, it was just, you know, as listening to you talk and you're trying to describe it, I'm just getting depressed. I think that's what it is. I'm depressed. I just, you know, we have a lack of energy coming into this postgame show where you think we should be, you know, screaming and ranting and raving, but it's hard to when you're depressed. It was just right there in front of us the last 2 weeks to show us who this team is. And is that a good thing or bad thing for the McCaskies to evaluate, you know, the team going forward? I don't know. Maybe they'll I don't know how they'll see it, but you know, the Bears right now are the better of the bad, and it was depressing to see that performance out there and to realize, you know, the lack of talent that the Bears had, the lack of depth. Yes, they had some injuries and some key guys out, and they exposed them. You know, the linebacker play got exposed, and I didn't realize Darnell Moody was the best player the Bears had on offense, that he was the one helping put up the 30-plus points. When he's not out there, they can't do anything. It's just, I'm depressed. It's not a good feeling to see the state of the Bears. You know, 8-8, I thought maybe, okay, if they go into this game and they lose a close game, I'll feel a little bit better, but that's not how I wanted to see this come out. I mean, it just, that second half, yeah, the first half they were kind of in it, but they were doing anything and everything to try to scrap and claw to stay in it. But then the Saints became the Saints and took over.
And I think the Anthony Miller expulsion, that upset me so much at the moment it happened, because you know that they don't have Mooney. You know they're down a player. You know Javon Wims has already dropped a touchdown pass. And you further know that he was thrown out of a game for swinging at a guy. So did they not expect that they'd be mouthing off, that they would be, they would take advantage of opportunities to try to upset you? To throw a punch at a guy again in a Saints game, I got to tell you, I can find enough anger and frustration to rant about that one.
No doubt. And then the other thing is, if you go back to the Javon Wims one, Mike Fury, the wide receivers coach, told him during the game, stay away from him, don't do this, he's going to instigate you during the game, and obviously told him during the week before. So I guarantee you that whole conversation was talked over again during the week, and then you let that happen. But to me, that kind of sums up Anthony Miller's career so far with the Bears, and it'll be interesting to see if that's his last play ever as a Bear.
Wow.
So, guys, here's the question that I think that the McCaskey family, that George McCaskey has to deal with now, is, and the best example of it is probably Anthony Miller, is, are we talking about a team in complete disarray and completely lacking talent, or are we talking about a team that has a handful of guys that are the problem, so to speak? You don't have an answer at quarterback, and obviously that is the biggest problem and not easily fixed. I'm not belittling that in any way. I don't know what to say about Anthony Miller at this point, you know, that you can do something that stupid. And yet at the same time, I tweeted about 5 seconds after Javon Wims was ejected 10 weeks ago that if I was the head coach, he wouldn't be on the team by the time I got to the locker room after the final gun. And if he doesn't drop that ball in the end zone, and I'm not, guys, the Saints are the better team. Believe me, I'm not defending anything the Bears did.
But the point is, anything in the playoffs can happen. When you have plays like that go your way, things can flip.
Well, and so that's what I mean. You know, so you're talking about Javon Wims and Anthony Miller. We're talking about the quarterback position. I also saw some really impressive stuff out there today. And all I'm getting at is you know, these folks who want to blow it up, Mike, and oh, you know, they stink. Everything about them is awful. Get rid of the coaching staff. Get rid of the front office. I just don't know if that's the case or if the correct off-season moves make them a contender, because New Orleans is one of the best teams in the NFC, and they're right there if not for some of this stupidity that we saw today.
They basically needed to play a fairly perfect game against the team that's that good and that well-balanced. And I really thought that the defense was going to have a good game, because I felt that, you know, when you think about offensive football, you always talk about, you know, assignment and execution. And I felt like they've obviously been together and they know what they're supposed to do, but they hadn't been on the field a lot. And there was a possibility of some rhythm issues with that offense. And I thought the Bears could disrupt it a little bit. So I was thinking the defense would be better than we had seen them of late, of the last half of the season or whatever, six games, whatever place you want to draw the line. But I don't think I was expecting the offense to be that bad. And I think, Hub, when you think about the good things that have happened, you know, you still have a serious decision to make about Allen Robinson. So as we sit here and talk about different guys who aren't the answer or will let you down or who you're not pleased with, and Darnell Mooney's had a great year, but he's also very slight of build, and I hope he holds up. And I don't know if that, seeing him go down after you feature him in a game, is an example of something to worry about in the future. But I know that Allen Robinson is by far their best receiver, and it doesn't look like he's coming back, or it's possible that he doesn't come back. So I think that the questions run a little bit deeper.
Well, Mike, here's what's funny about that is Patrick and Olin and I were talking, four and a half hours ago, and I think that we all kind of agreed that if they could hold the Saints to 23 points again, which is what they did in regulation 10 weeks ago, they had a chance to win the game. And who knew that the defense could hold them under that and not even be in this game? And so, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct about A-Rob. It is a decision. Although there's no indication that Robinson wants out of Chicago. He wants to get paid. And so unlike the quarterback situation, at least they have some control over that and they can do something about it. But I'm going to probably over the next couple hours with our callers keep coming back to this same thing, because we're going to get, you know, multiple calls of fire everybody. You know, we know that's coming. Okay?
You think?
And you know what? I at this point, I'm not going to sit here and say they're wrong after what we just watched.
Right.
But
right.
I also cannot say they're right after what we just watched. And that is the ultimate frustration of this football team, which is stuck right in the middle of the National Football League.
Hub, you're adding to my depression. That I can't go one way or the other. I'm just sitting here in a dark room and upset.
But people need to understand what it means if you fire a coach. He does have 2 years left on his deal. So what that means is you're firing a coach, and you've got to look at it as if you're then firing the entire staff. So it's not a 5 million times 2 decision. It's like a 17 to 20 million times 2 decision, right? If everyone is on the same time frame that he's on. So you're talking about making a decision that's not $5 million. It's 15 to 17 million, right? It's closer to 20 than it is to 5. And I think that has got to be on their mind, given the realities of the financial situation around the league. I understand how good the television contracts are, and the league, you know, added another game to make more money. But when you ultimately think about it, they're talking about the salary cap not going up or maybe going down. And I know they're going to add another game. I know the NFL is going to work hard at that. But those are decisions you're going to have to make and things you're going to have to think about with your roster. And then you throw in coaching decisions. It's a lot of money.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me ask you two guys this, because you guys covered the NFL forever, and I don't even know the answer to this. Well, I know that coaches and owners will, you know, get together and talk after the season and you know, go forward from there. But it's almost like, to me, it's like Matt Nagy has to re-interview for this job, that he has to go back to the McCaskies and say, okay, these are the changes I'm going to make. This is what I'm going to do here. I'm going to get rid of this guy. I want to keep this guy on my staff, and this is what the vision I see forward. What do you think? Do you think that happens? Is that how it's going to go?
Mike, I don't know what you think. I don't think Matt Nagy's in any jeopardy. There'll be a conversation. There'll be meetings.
Right.
There's no question about that. I think he'll tell them what he thinks and what's on his mind, but I don't think he has to convince them to keep him. And that's really the point that I'm trying to make here. Mike, you're absolutely right about the financial ramifications of it. But what I'm trying to get my arms around is I'm not convinced it's a good football decision to get rid of this coaching staff. I mean, I'm listening to Romo and Nance at the end of the game, and Romo is almost scoffing at the idea, you know, of firing Matt Nagy. And I got to tell you, you know, based on his record, again, we'll take the calls and people will try and differentiate between, you know, good wins and bad wins. Based on his record after 3 years, coaches don't get fired. I defy somebody to find me an NFL coach with 3 years with one organization who's 7 games over 500 with 2 playoff appearances and he gets fired. I just don't see any chance of that happening.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen either. I really haven't felt that Matt Nagy was in danger. I think the Pace conversation is a different one. I think Ryan Pace is in a different situation because he's 6 years in, because there were some bad decisions made, some big mistakes in free agency, and I think that, you know, you've got to make a hard call on a quarterback. Now's not the time you have to make that decision. You don't have to make it by Monday. You got plenty of time to think it through, but you need to know who's your guy moving forward, and you need to ask yourself, who's the person that's going to make that decision? Is it the guy that brought in Mike Glennon and the guy that drafted Mitch and the guy that brought in Glennon? Foles, you know, there are financial ramifications. I think, yes, that's my point. I don't know.
It's also
if
Mully,
the McCaskies
Mully, it's
are
also,
keeping track. It's a lot
right,
of dough.
It's who he didn't bring in as well, where he said
right.
he was going to draft a quarterback every year and develop one. And he never did it.
Well, and guys, and Mike, I know we got to let you go, but here's what complicates it even more is that there are six GM jobs open already.
Right.
And if you're going to make a change, are you going to get the top candidate by starting out by telling him you can't pick your own coach because we're keeping Matt Nagy? So, you know, this is just it's a bit of a quagmire right now. And I don't see a good answer. Well, let me rephrase that. I do personally, I have some opinions. I think there are some good answers, but I don't see an answer that is going to make Bears fans happy.
Wow. It's going to be a fun day tomorrow. You guys are about to have a ton of fun.
Can't wait. Cure my depression callers. Let's go. Get me on one side of the fence.
Mike, I'd ask you what you got planned for the morning, but I think we have a pretty good idea. It is going. Black Monday was last Monday. We'll see what happens here in Chicago. We know the fans are going to be juiced. I know that you and David will be as well. I want to thank you so much for joining us every week here on our Prop Swap post-game show. It certainly has been a lot of fun. Any parting thoughts you have for the Bears fans busily getting their texts ready and getting in line on the phone lines, or just stuff you want to say for tomorrow morning?
You know, I want to just thank you guys. I know I was sort of thrust upon you to a certain extent, and I apologize for that, but I've had a great time, and you've been so kind to me. I've really appreciated getting a chance to chat this out with you because it helps me in my therapy session then in the morning.
Well, and Michael, you are one of the deans of Chicago Bears football in town, in print and on the radio, and it's been absolutely our pleasure. So thank you so much. I know I won't be up at 5, I'll be honest with you, but by 7 I'll have you guys tuned in. I'm looking forward to it and looking forward to just continuing to enjoy the stuff that you and David are doing. And let's keep our fingers crossed. Maybe we can all do this again together next year.
Outstanding. Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Mulligan. Again, the Mully and Haw Show every Monday through Friday from 5 to 9 right here at 670 The Score. Guys, our phone number here, 312-644-6767. We've got this weird schedule today and time clock, but I know we usually break at the top of the hour, so I'm going to take a quick break here. Julio Roseo is our producer today, the man behind the glass. He will be the friendly voice at the other end of the phone when you dial us up. I want to give Julio a chance to get you guys lined up and ready to go. So we will take this quick commercial break, and then for the next couple hours, your phone calls, your texts. The Bears are 21-9 losers in their wild card game to the New Orleans Saints. Let's talk about it right here on The Score.
Tomorrow morning starting at 5 a.m. Don't miss Bears Monday on The Score. The Score guys react to the Bears' early postseason exit, cover what changes could be coming at Halas Hall, and take your calls only on Bears Monday starting tomorrow at 5 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's home for Bears fans. Brought to you by Elmhurst BMW and Loyola Medicine. Don't miss Bears Monday on The Score, an all-day recap of the Bears' loss to the Saints, only on Bears Monday. And now, it's time for the Prop Swap post-game show with Score senior football expert Hub Arkish and former Bears long-snapping Iron Man Patrick Manley on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by PNC Bank, the official bank of the Chicago Bears.
Welcome back, everybody. We are going to get right to the phone lines now. Patrick Manley is here. I'm Hub Arkish. And first up, he's been a regular all season long, so we let him kick it off again tonight. Steven is in Columbus. Steve, how you doing?
Happy New Year to both of you guys.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You know, defense gave it all, and I was so impressed with the way they played. At least, you know, what I thought was going to be the worst game in all the playoffs this weekend looked a little more competitive and competent. But listen, when the offense just doesn't give you anything, you know, I know you tweeted, why no first down run? I was, you know, being aggressive with myself with just so many bunch of inside runs where Mustafa and Bars were just getting blown up inside and getting pushed back, you know, like what we saw earlier in the season. And the lack of discipline really, really disturbs me, like we saw with the Trestman era, and we all know how that ended up, you know, eventually. And I'm not saying Nagy's going to be fired, but that's up to the management to make that decision. But let's be real here. Until we fix the quarterback, this team is not going anywhere. The thing that I've always been bothered by this team is that we draft the quarterback first round every few years, and then we don't do anything. And then we just basically hope that they turn into something. I mean, that's not how it should work, in my opinion. The new general manager and I hope they will bring in a new ideas and a new evaluation to this long-standing position that we're still trying to find a quarterback since Ted Luckman for 80-plus years. We need to do a better evaluation. And we got to keep drafting quarterbacks, not just in the first round, but in the second or third round, in the lower round. You know, Tom Brady was picked in the sixth round, and I get that. You know, Bill Belichick have had a lot to do with his development and where he is in his career. But how do we know that, right? We got to keep on hitting those. And I just hope that whoever's at the head coach or whoever's the general manager come tomorrow or next week, I hope that mindset will be changed. And I hope that George will finally see that we have to fix this position once and for all.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate it. You know, Pat, the one thing that I have to point out, Steve said they draft a quarterback in the first round every few years. Actually, part of the problem is that they have not prioritized the position. They've only drafted five in the first round in the last 40 years. You know, you look at Mitch in 2017, last first-round quarterback before him was 14 years earlier with Rex Grossman. That was just 4 years after the disaster that was Cade McNown. And then, you know, McNown was, 17 years after Jim McMahon. So they haven't made a priority of the position. Now, you'd like to get it right, but even if you get it right, you got to draft one high every 10 or 12 years. You know, they haven't done that. And, I think the most important point that you made is that Ryan Pace got here on day one and said that part of his drafting philosophy is he'd like to draft a quarterback every year. Well, he has now overseen six drafts and drafted one quarterback, and that was Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, and that's just I don't know that that's the person to me in this entire equation where I think he's on the hottest seat and should be on the hottest seat. And another player that's not a quarterback that's an issue was the one that got kicked out today. He traded up to get him, missed on him. So that's another draft pick that he missed on with him and missed the other pick that he used to trade up. So he has a lot of misses. He's put together a team that's you've seen against better talent the last 2 weeks. You saw it in the middle of the season that they just can't compete. And when they have injuries, they can't compete even more. They look even worse. And then, you know, we said it when we were at the draft show that I said it with the draft show, he's putting all his chips on the table. And if Mitch Trubisky does not pan out, that's his job. And that's where he stands right now. Mitch Trubisky has not panned out. He's not a difference maker. He hasn't improved. Or I guess he's improved, but not to any level you want him to. So where I look at Ryan Pace right now, his seat is very, very hot.
So, Pat, let me ask you a quick question before I go back to the phones. Because, you know, in 16 years, you saw, what, 325, 350 rookies come into the locker room. And you see a kid like Miller, and he's a second-round talent. The talent isn't the issue. He has the maturity of about a five-year-old. You know, and I mean, could you spot those guys when you saw him come in?
Oh, you knew it. You knew it. I mean, I'm not going to give names, but you knew it. And they just acted different, and they would single themselves out. They'd cry like babies in practice if something didn't go their way. They'd bring it into the locker room and just people would start walking away from them. I don't know if that's how Miller is at practice, but it looks that way on the film, on game day, the way he handles himself on the sideline. And those are guys you try to isolate them, put them in self-isolation to stay away from them and let them, you know, out themselves to the you know, general manager and head coach, and hopefully sooner than later, they're out of the building. But I thought that's one good thing that when we were with Lovey and Jerry Angelo, he did a good job of drafting guys that weren't like that and then fit our locker room. And I do think that's important. And, yeah, we weren't you know, an ultra successful team, but you look back on it now, we were pretty good compared to what the Bears have been in the last few years. So it's not good for a locker room, and it just makes people uncomfortable. And it's when you get that happening, sometimes you can deal with it, Hub, because the talent is so good, but he's proven he's not that good. So that's one to me that I just don't know if I'd want him in my locker room.
Boy, you think the Bears have problems. On the opening play of the Pittsburgh Steelers-Cleveland Browns game, Pittsburgh's all-pro center, not this year, but at times Maurkice Pouncey, just snapped the ball over the head of Ben Roethlisberger in shotgun, and the Cleveland Browns recover in the end zone for a touchdown. Cleveland up 6-0 with, what, no time? Well, probably 7 seconds off the clock or whatever.
Whoops.
Maybe. So, well, maybe they're going to redefine ugly, because I thought the Bears and Saints just did a pretty good job of it. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens in this one. Let's get back to the phones. Mike is out in Rockford, another one of our regulars. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm going to get right back to the point. Pat, thanks for being on the call. You're wonderful. just want to ask you guys, Hub, the Green Bay Packers as an organization and teams like the Steelers and Patriots, they seem to draft from within. And what we're seeing is a thin roster in the Bears. When guys go down, other teams plug a guy in and they perform because they have
Mike,
depth.
Mike, I'm sorry. Well, time out. Mike, I'm sorry. What do you mean draft from within? What does that mean? I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what I'm saying, not from within. I should say draft in the organization, that they draft rather than signing free agents. Like the Packers, they have draft capital. It seems to me like Ryan Pace has given away so many draft picks that we've lost on picks. We go into the draft with 5 picks, 6 picks, 7 picks, 4 picks. Mm-hmm. And that's not how you build a roster and you get talent. And then he's got to go out and he's got to sign these expensive free agents, and give up like Nick Foles. And then you got to give up a 4th round pick. I just want to know, Hub and Pat, if you guys think that you got to get a general manager to build the lines. As Doug Buffon used to say, the game's won in the trenches. If you build the offensive line and the defensive line, everything else falls into place. I know we need a quarterback, but please tell me, Hub, that if Ryan Pace is kept around another year, I don't even want to see him draft a quarterback in the 2nd or 3rd round because I don't think the guy is capable.
Well, Mike, all right, so 2 totally different points there, and we'll get to both of them. Pat, nobody is better at accumulating draft picks than Bill Belichick. He's been doing it for a long, long time. The Packers actually go both ways. They've been known to trade picks to get players that they might want, and then at other times they've accumulated draft picks as well. But accumulating draft picks, I think, has to be a better way to go than trading multiple picks for guys that you target, even if those guys work out. And too many of Pace's guys have not worked out. So your thoughts on that before we get to Mike's second point.
Oh, yeah, I'm with that. And I think, he's done – Ryan Pace has done an okay job drafting later down in the draft, but has really missed up top. And I think that's what hurts him. And then he's really missed at free agency trying to fill some of those holes where he's missed. And you just, the roster you look right now, we're looking at the Steelers. He was talking about the Steelers as well, that, some of these rosters, you look at across the board, you're like, oh, this 2nd round pick hit, this 3rd round pick hit, this 4th round pick has been there for 8-9 years. He's a very solid player. And I just don't see a bunch of that on the Bears roster, but it's just, he's missed a lot. He has missed a lot.
Well, and to Mike's second point, listen, I was raised in the game by Jim Finks, and Jim Finks created, or at least was the first one credited with the philosophy of you build the offensive and defensive line first. So, Mike, I certainly agree with you. The problem, though, is that whoever the general manager is, and I suspect it's going to be Ryan Pace, they have to draft a quarterback this year. They cannot not draft a quarterback. If Mitch Trubisky is back, it is strictly on a 1 or 2 year deal to prove it and compete. It's not because now you suddenly think that he's the answer. And when you look at what's out there in free agency, you're not going to find the answer there either. And even if you do, that's going to be an older veteran. So, Pat, I don't think you do it in the 1st round or probably even the 2nd round, but they've got to draft a developmental quarterback this year.
Oh, 100%. And, you look at what's out there, too, for free agency, that there's nothing out there that gets you excited, zero, unless, somebody cuts somebody that might be an older guy that could come in and fill in for a year or two. But, but to me, it's too late. You said you were going to do it before, and you haven't done it. You do it now if you're Ryan Pace. That's a little too late, and I just – I just think he's dug himself a hole too, because there's too many other issues. If I'm going to draft a player, I need right now is a left tackle or an O lineman to solidify this O line, like we're talking about building it in from the trenches. So Ryan Pace has put himself in a bad situation. It'll be interesting to see what comes up in the next few weeks, but for sure they need to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, no question about that. Guys, as we go through this, and please give us your calls with anything that is on your mind. I think that Pat is a little more clear-eyed than I am about how he feels about the GM situation. I understand and agree with a lot of what Pat is saying, but I also know that it's unfortunately, and I'm not accusing Pat of this, I'm just saying in general, it is often easier said than done. And I worry about what the alternatives are, having run businesses or my business for over 40 years and hired and fired, I don't know how many people. The one cardinal rule I always had was I never fired anybody unless I was confident I could find somebody better to put in that spot.
Right.
And I think that is the position that George McCaskey finds himself in right now. So I'm going to try and get us back on a fairly normal clock here, Julio. I know I'm a little late, but normally we'd be breaking about here. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Dave, Mike, Chris, you guys are next. Anybody who wants to join them, please give us a call. Lots to figure out about this Chicago Bears football team after their 21-9 loss to the New Orleans Saints. Let's see how much of it we can get done here on our Prop Swap post-game show presented by PNC Bank right here on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Second and four, 2 seconds to go. Mitch to throw, up in the air.
Deflected
pass into the hands of Jimmy Graham for the touchdown. Touchdown Bears on the final snap.
Straight to the locker room.
Of the season, and yep, to the tunnel he goes. And the Bears get the touchdown, 21-9. They will not have the extra point. That'll be the final snap of the game. And ladies and gentlemen, 2020, now a memory in this early days of January, the wild card playoff loss to the New Orleans Saints, 21-9. And the Bears end their season still without a playoff win since the 2010 season. They'll regroup, figure things out.
Welcome back to our Prop Swap post-game show presented by PNC Bank. Highlights courtesy of our buddies Jeff Joniak and Tom Fair over at WBBM News Radio 780 105.9 on your FM dial, where you go for the hometown call of the Chicago Bears games. Pat, I could not think of anything more appropriate with the way that game went than Jimmy Graham with, by the way, an incredible catch, not that it meant anything, taking it straight into the tunnel. I wish, had I ever had a chance to make a play like that, I wish I could have done that afterwards. That to me was symbolic of everything that happened out there today.
I laughed out loud when I saw it. I go, yep, that's it. That's the end of the year. Just take it in. Score a garbage touchdown, go to the locker room, shower up, get on the plane, and the season's over. Let's move on to next year.
Yeah, I think he really did give whoever is going to be in charge some things to think about. I was pretty sure that he was a certain cap casualty after the season until about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I am now not so sure that he should be. Guy finishes the year with 9 touchdowns for you and your only legitimate red zone threat, but not high on the list of things that we have to sort out right now after that really disturbing performance from the Bears in New Orleans. Let's get back to the phones. Dave is in Singer, Wisconsin, I believe it is. Is that Singer or Slinger? Looks like Slinger. Dave, what do you got for us tonight?
Is anybody from Chicago call?
Not yet. You're up next, though, buddy.
Yeah.
Are you with us, Dave? Oh, okay. I guess Dave is not with us. Let's get to Mike in Chicago Heights. Dave wanted somebody from Chicago. We got Mike in Chicago Heights. Mike, how you doing?
Well, South Suburbs, but good evening, gentlemen. Another sad.
All right, yeah, guys, we're apparently having a little trouble with our phone line, our BetQL listener line, and I do apologize for that. That was not Mike having fun with us. We're having a little trouble in the line, so we'll take another crack at it here and see if we can get it to work properly. Chris has called us from Jacksonville, Florida. Chris, I hope the line is cleaned up for you. How you doing tonight?
Uh,
All right, Pat. This is going to be an interesting post-game show because
no, it is. Well, let me go back. I want to go back to the point you made about Jimmy Graham coming back for another year, because I thought maybe he would be a one-year guy, and he put together a better season than I thought he would. I thought the Bears adjusted and used him properly in the red zone to get all those TDs. But what I like too is, from what I hear, is how he's helping Cole Kmet. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way to help a young player. When you have a veteran that you respect, a veteran that does it the right way, a veteran that has done it the right way and produced, and if you have a guy like that that you can watch work every day, a guy that can evaluate you, be honest with you of how you're working, what you need to do to get better, that's worth some money as well. So that relationship between those two guys, it might be making Jimmy Graham some extra money and making that decision easier to keep him. But, you know, again, we don't know if Ryan Pace is here. Does that make it easier on him? But then if you have a new person coming in making personnel decisions, how do they truly feel about it? How do they want to use that money in that position?
Well, and here's the other thing about it, Pat, is that, you know, Jimmy Graham is a true U or move tight end. That's mm-hmm. how he went to five straight Pro Bowls in New Orleans. That's where his troubles first started, when he wanted to be paid like a receiver instead of a tight end, based on the franchise tag that was put on him because it was so much more money. The Saints weren't willing to do that. They dealt him instead. And then he goes to Seattle and he goes to Green Bay and they try and make him a Y or an inline tight end, a 60-minute guy. And it's not the strength of his game. Now, he came to Chicago this year and really improved his blocking as the season went on, but nonetheless was playing that Y position until they started to give Cole Kmet more reps at it. Now, in spite of I don't even know if I want to blame Kmet for that penalty. I thought it was one of the more ridiculous calls I've ever seen.
Terrible.
I mean, to do that in a playoff game, and it definitely impacted the game. Are the things that, as we analyze this, we're not just going to sit here and take all the cheap one-liners and make fun of the Bears. I mean, Wins has got to catch that football. Kmet doesn't get that penalty, they might tie the game at 7. You just don't know what happens after plays like that. And so I don't want to hang that one on Kmet. He has had some youthful mistakes the last few weeks, but he also has begun to show in recent weeks he's got a chance to be a pretty good Y. Now, if he does, and you can play Graham as a true move tight end, he becomes that much more effective as well, because while he was great in the red zone, he didn't do a ton for you between the 20s.
Yeah, and that call on Kmet, normally I'm not one to bang on referees, because they have a hard job too, and Dick Duran put it a great way. He said they're the best in the world at what they do, like you do as a football player in the NFL, and you all make mistakes. But that's one to me where you can't make that call. You can't make a judgment call to change. It didn't change the outcome of a game, but you're changing the process of the game. And that to me was a blank poop call. That one got me a little upset about the referees and making a difference in the game. And that's just not fair to the players on the field for both sides. Because, you know, if that happened to the Saints, they wouldn't want it to happen. And there's times that penalties happen like that, and you're like, good for us. But you just hope that doesn't come back to, you know, he flips it back and does it to us. But I that's one where I truly got upset at the referee for making that dumb call.
Well, and here's the other thing about it, is that it's got to go both ways. Now, I make no excuses whatsoever for Javon Wims 10 weeks ago, for Anthony Miller tonight, but this punk, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, he gets away with it every week, and obviously what he's doing is worse than what Kmet did, because nobody took a swing at Cole.
Right, right.
You know, and so when the officials start impacting the outcome of the game, and they clearly did with that one, because the Bears had a real chance to go in and tie it. After the 15-yarder, there was no chance they were going to get anything but a field goal out of that. And I just don't understand how officials can make calls like that.
Yeah, it's just you can't have it. Like that's unacceptable. And I think that's one, as the referees get evaluated each week. And I guess this is an all-star crew, right? Don't they put together the best referees?
Yes.
I'm kind of shocked that they allowed, a referee of that caliber that graded out well enough to be in the playoffs to do something like that. That just to me it's unacceptable. And, I'm sure he'll get downgraded for it. But like we said, it's not changing the outcome of the game, but that's just something that's one of the first times this year I think I really got upset at a referee, just because you can't have it in the playoffs. You're supposed to be one of the better ones. And that's just such a ticky-tack call to make at that point of the game.
Well, and the explanation that Romo and Nance wanted to sell, which is that he tossed the ball at him. No, he didn't. He tossed the ball to the official. I have no idea what was going on there on that one. And that was just really unfortunate. You know, again, I guess the answer is keep your mouth shut, period. And Komet will learn that as he grows up too.
I like his passion. I hear what you're saying, but the way he's been playing the last few weeks, the way he's been running, he looks like he's playing angry, and I want to see that from my tight end. And I have no problem if anybody's playing on the edge. To me, he was playing on the edge. He was fired up, and it did not warrant a personal foul at all. That was a poor call on the referee.
Yeah, and I don't want to mislead anybody. I completely agree with you. I'm not going after call. I'm just saying, you know, it's just one more thing from this Bears team that we've seen, you know, and folks want to hang that on the coaches. You know, some will want to blame Clancy Barone or Bill Lazor or Matt Nagy. Listen, there's things they can do better as coaches, but I think even they would say that they just don't know where to go with that one. With Miller, that's a whole different thing. You cannot take a swing in a game. You can't do it. It just doesn't matter what the guy said.
He's been told for weeks. I mean, he was told since the Wims week, you can't do that. I mean, you just know you can't do that. But that's been, I guarantee you, that was just talked about every day in meetings and on the practice field every day, and he still did it.
And the fact that it was the same guy, you know, it was 10 weeks ago, it just, that one was pretty stunning to me. You know, we talked in the pregame, we're working here. We've got a problem with our phone lines, guys, and I know Julio Roseo is working hard on trying to get them straightened out. We're going to take a break in just a minute, and then we'll see what we can figure out during the break. But just the one other thing that I want to get to as far as stuff going on, you know, out here during the game and what the Bears should have been prepared for and weren't prepared for, the number of encroachment calls today on third down,
I mean
– you know, we can blame the coaches all day, but I can guarantee you that the Chuck Pagano.
That's on the players.
Yeah.
That's always anytime an offensive lineman jumps off sides. We heard Jermon Bushrod talk about it in the pregame show, talking about how Sean Payton would deal with him if he did it down in New Orleans. And when guys do it on defense, that to me is on the players, and that is handled in-house. The peer pressure, what you feel from your teammates when you let them down doing something like that is worse than a coach yelling at you. But that's on the player. I mean, you're an NFL player. You can't have that many. And the other thing, Hub, they had 9 penalties in this game. The previous 4 weeks, I went back and looked, they only had 3. So that was another reason why they were having some success. They were disciplined. They weren't getting behind the chains. They weren't letting teams, you know, get free first downs on a fourth down, which is just Sean Payton came out and said it was called no-brainer freeze. So they were not going to snap the ball. And they jumped off sides and gave him, a free 7 points there. And it's unacceptable. That's another thing that's unacceptable. And that to me is not coaching. You can never blame coaches for that. That's on the players.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here and see if we can work out our technical problems. I will report for everybody with us who is not in front of a TV set. Cleveland Browns are shredding the Pittsburgh Steelers. This one could be over halfway through the first quarter. Ben Roethlisberger threw an interception that was almost as bad as the snap Marquise Pouncey put over his head on their first possession. The Browns quickly converted that into a Baker Mayfield to Jarvis Landry touchdown. They then held the Steelers again, and they are now running through the Steelers' defense like Swiss cheese. I mean, this game is in Pittsburgh. The Browns have 2nd and 9 at the Steelers' 22-yard line, up 14-0 with 6 minutes left in the first period. We take this very quick commercial break on our Prop Swap postgame show. Patrick Manley, Hub Arkush, we're back with you in just a moment with more here at The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We haven't gotten into any of that, Pat, in regards to that stuff. You know, again, like I told you all at the beginning of the week, we've been so focused in on this game. And then the same thing goes with the staff. Again, it's like, you all know, I mean, it's probably not just our staff. It's probably a lot of staffs with, whether it's promotions or demotions or whatever, there's always change. That's just how it goes. So that's something that, you know, tomorrow for us as a team, we'll do all of our exit interviews and all that stuff and talk to the guys, but that'll be down the road. I'm just at a point right now where I can literally say, I appreciate the fight of these players. And now tomorrow we'll discuss the other stuff.
locker room after the game, talking about more to come tomorrow. We will now attempt to go back to the phone line, 312-644-6767. We believe that we have the issue fixed, and we're going to start in Mokena, where Sam is on the line. Sam, how you doing?
Doing good, Hub. How you doing, Pat?
Good.
How you doing, my friend? I think it was this week, you had talked about you and Bernstein and Layla were talking about the Brad Biggs report. And it was basically saying that they might use this game to determine whether or not they're going to keep Ryan Pace. Now, whether or not that's a good idea to begin with, just basing it off one game, it's a whole other conversation. I guess my question is this. You would know about this obviously more than I would. So let's say they do fire Ryan Pace and now you keep Matt Nagy. What kind of general manager are you expecting to get when you basically are telling him, hey, we're going to put you in charge of drafting, player personnel decisions, all that, but you have to inherit this head coach who, while we understand, you know, he's got a good record, he's made the playoff two times, you might not believe in him. He hasn't shown much as far as the offensive end. I mean, I guess my question is, do people still look at the Chicago Bears job as that top flight job, even though they're going to be handcuffed? It just seems kind of odd. I mean, I guess it's the Bears' way these days is to, hey, you know, inherit a head coach. So I was just curious, if they go ahead and do that, what kind of candidate are you getting? Are you going to let Matt Nagy have an input in who becomes GM? I'll hang up and listen to your call, my friend.
Sam, thank you for the phone call. We actually were just touching on this a little while ago with Mike Mulligan. And you know, Pat, I think the couple things I would say to Sam is that, first of all, there's only 32 of these GM jobs in the world. And so everybody worthy of having one is going to do whatever they can to get one. And the candidates who would not be interested or turn one down because of circumstances are few and far between. Now, beyond that, my God, the Steelers are down 20-0, and Roethlisberger just threw another interception. There's still 3 minutes left in the first quarter. Sorry, guys, trying not to be distracted.
Which Drew Brees did that today.
Yeah, I thought the Bears were ugly. Lord, I don't know what the Steelers are doing. Point number two on the whole GM situation is that the Chicago Bears job remains absolutely one of the premium opportunities in all of sports. It is in, you know, we know about the Heritage franchise. We know it's in the third biggest market in the National Football League. We know what the devotion to this football team is. And then you add to all of that, they have, if not the best, one of the best facilities in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. Contrary to what, you know, some of the haters want to say, they spend as much money as anybody else. And so if you believe, Pat, that you are going to be good at the job, that you are a quality GM, then yeah, absolutely you'd want the Bears job. Now, would you want it as much as the Texans job, knowing that Deshaun Watson is already in place there? You know, that is a different question. But in general, when you evaluate this job, regardless of whether Matt Nagy is the coach or not, if you are worthy of being considered, yeah, you want this job.
100%. And this is not me being biased, but a lot has to do with the city of Chicago. And what I mean by that, too, is think about Theo Epstein taking the Chicago Cubs job. It's a tough job to do what he did, and he did it. And think about the rewards he felt of the love of the city and all of that he was able to build a championship and a winner there. You get the same thing, if not even more, if you get the Bears to that level. And the city just loves you more, that energy we get here when the Bears are winning. So I do think people know the history of the NFL, obviously, being the charter franchise, but they also understand what it's like when you win with the Bears in this city. So I think that goes a long way with all personnel people across the NFL, and I think that's a big positive for guys to wanting to come to Chicago, because if you do and when you win here, it's different than most other cities. Are there other cities that it's similar to? Sure, but I think Chicago is one of those places that, as a player, as a coach, as a general manager, especially a general manager, if you can build a championship team in this city, it's just that much more rewarding.
Chris is dialing us up from Evanston. Chris, how you doing, bud?
Hey, how y'all doing? I just got to say, I thought Javon Wims should have been gone the first New Orleans game. He doesn't produce, so when you make that kind of mistake, you lost your roster spot. Same thing, Anthony Miller. when's the last time we called Anthony Miller's name before today? So I think there's not a single reason for either one of them to be on the team next year. As far as the GM and the coach, we fired Lovie Smith. I think his record was 10-6. We've talked about on this program before. And he was brought in to be a defensive coach. We always had a good defense. We fired him at 10-6. Where has been a great offense? If we don't sign Mitch Trubisky, I hope he goes to the Patriots. So we can have a great coach, you know, build around a quarterback's talents, which took Matt Nagy 3.5 years. And the national media and all the local media and the fans saying his job is on the line if he don't give up play calling. So that's basically, you know, I just don't see who we bring in at GM because of what you say, you know, Hub, who's the replacement? If we're going to fire the coach, who's the replacement? I think we got Jim Harbaugh out there for coach. We got the San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator. We got coaching candidates. Who do we bring in as GM? If he ain't from Baltimore, if he ain't from Pittsburgh, who never miss on draft picks, it seemed like, I don't want nothing to do with him.
Well, Chris, thank you for the phone call. We should point out, because the Lovie Smith reference is interesting, and guys, forgive me. I'm doing my job here and giving you the news as it breaks. The Cleveland Browns are now up 28-0 on the Pittsburgh Steelers with 1:56 to play in the first period. Thank God Heinz Field is empty. If the fans were there, I can't imagine.
It might be empty right now. Everybody walking out.
Yeah, just something else. But, you know, Pat, you were there, and you know what was going on. The reason Lovie got fired was because Jerry Angelo got fired the year before. And Phil Emery came in determined to get rid of Lovie Smith. You know, it was really unfortunate. You can go back to Jerry Angelo in the beginning of his regime. He gets hired in June of 2001. Dick Geron is the NFL Coach of the Year. The Bears go 13-3 and are the NFC's number one seed. So he couldn't fire Dick Geron, but he immediately began breaking up the football team so that remember what happens right afterwards? He gets rid of Traylor, yep. He gets rid of Ted Washington, and he went out of his way to have Geron fail, you know? So now when you're talking about the GM that you bring in here with Matt Nagy, you know, it depends on the guy. You know, a good GM might say, hey, I potentially got a good coach here. I might want to help him succeed. But there is a good chance, Pat, that if they bring in a GM and tell him you got to give Nagy one more year, that he's already made up his mind, you know, and that's going to be another lost season if you end up with something like that.
Yeah, and you could feel that in Hallis Hall when that happened. You knew there wasn't symmetry between the new GM and the head coach. And to go back to Jerry Angelo, and I think the reason why he fired Dick Geron is because he wanted to bring that Tampa style of defense in there, and I don't think that's what Dick Geron wanted to run. And he had a philosophy and an idea of how he wanted his team to look. So if you do that, like you're talking about, if you get to the point where you bring in a new GM and Matt Nagy's there, to me it would be important to find somebody that you could maybe marry together with those two and have the same vision going forward. But I wouldn't want to take away from some, you know, rock star GM that can come in and make a change and say, hey, I want to get rid of Nagy in a year. But that's a tough one. And you feel it in the building. You feel it as players, and you understand it because you start seeing who's drafted, different body styles on defense, different types of players. So you understand what's going on. But that's a tough one to deal with, and you would just hope that it would work out for success of the Chicago Bears. And if you do bring in a new GM, that he can be married with Matt Nagy, and they can move on going forward in the right direction and not have to take a step back and bring a new voice in, new assistant coaches in, new terminology and all that stuff, because that takes a little while to learn and get up to speed.
I think what's really difficult about this whole conversation, Pat, is that everybody can agree that Ryan Pace has done enough to justify his firing. I don't think anybody's debating that. Mm-hmm. The question is timing. The question is, does it make sense now? And the reason somebody was trying to report the rumor that I want to say it's Mike Bordicchi, I'm going to get his name wrong, but the Kansas City Chiefs personnel guy, is for exactly that reason, the idea that maybe he and Nagy would be a good fit together. But while Matt Nagy, I don't think, should be fired, he certainly has done nothing to suggest that he should have outsized influence on who the next GM is if they decide to move on from Pace.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's very valid. I just, I said the word depressing when we started here about the game, but it's also depressing kind of where they stand with the personnel department and where they stand with Matt Nagy and the situation they're in right now, because there's no clear-cut answer. I think some people, yes, fire everybody and start it over, but I'm not in that pool. I'm more of one. And I'm on the quote-unquote fire Ryan Pace bandwagon because of his track record and what I said on draft day. When you push all your chips in on your quarterback and he doesn't work out, that's a fireable offense. And that's just the way it's been in the NFL over history. And that has really hurt this franchise.
All right, folks, 312-644-6767. Julio Riseo is a magician. He has the phone lines working properly now, so give us a phone call. Again, 312-644-6767 is the way to join us on the BetQL listener line. We take a quick commercial break here, and then we're back with more of your calls in just a moment right here on the Prop Swap postgame show on The Score.
WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Live from the Hyundai Studios, a radio.com sports station. The Score!
Mitch, do you want to be back here next year?
Yeah, I think I could definitely see myself back here next year. Obviously, a lot of that's out of my control, but it feels like home, and it feels like we have unfinished business. And right now, I'm really just bummed about how the season being over and how the game went. So a lot of emotions going on right now, but I could see that, but we'll see. There's a lot of things that got to happen and a lot of decisions that got to be made, and it's out of my control, but I could see that.
Mitchell Trubisky asked the question in his interview post-game in the locker room, gave the answer that many had been waiting for. He was seemingly, I don't want to say reluctant, but uninformative when asked the question a couple of weeks ago. That answer sounded pretty clear, Pat. And you know, I got to tell you, I know, again, where the haters are going to go with this. This was not on Mitch tonight. I mean, he didn't play great. He didn't play good. He didn't do anything to say, hey, we got to get this kid back. But at the same time, he made a couple beautiful throws in the first half. Javon Wims just killed him. The game plan made no sense to me whatsoever. They threw the ball on 9 of their first 13 plays, and they did not call a first down run until almost 5 minutes into the second quarter. And so when we talk about, you know, whether the improvement in the offense in recent weeks against bad teams was fool's gold, you know, certainly they did nothing against this Saints defense, but I didn't understand the game plan today.
The boot call, I would have stuck with the similar Green Bay Packers game plan. I know some people didn't like it, but they're so undermanned, that's the game plan to me they have to run, but you have to execute it so-called to perfection, without mistakes, without getting behind the chains, and the Bears didn't do that. They needed to get the run game going, but again, this defense the Saints have is pretty darn good, so there's no real matchup where you can say, okay, we can win the game if we beat them here, because they're pretty solid everywhere, but I'm with you on the game plan. I wasn't a big fan of it. I wish they would have come out started with the run a little bit more and gotten more in the play action and the boot action going, but they didn't. But the other thing is, you know, this is going to be a knock on Ryan Pace again, is that, you know, he was drafted number 2 in the NFL to be a difference maker. And you said that he didn't play that bad of a game. He didn't do it. But to me, when you draft a guy at that position, he needs to be a difference maker. He needs to be a game changer. He needs to be one where we talked about in the pregame where coaches are game planning because of him. Defensive coaches got to be scared of his arms, his legs, all this stuff. And he just doesn't have that extra oomph or whatever that, you know, the other guys that have been drafted up that high have. And that's a knock on Ryan Pace as well. But he just doesn't – he is who he is as a quarterback, and he's not going to win games for you because of who he is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and just so I don't get the conversation painted with the wrong brush, I'll say it again. He did nothing today to suggest that you got to have him back.
Right, yes.
Not suggesting that in any way, but again, he did enough that if a couple guys are on him, make some plays and they give him a few more chances, I don't know that he wouldn't have. I do think that he has played better football the last 4 or 5 weeks, but you needed to see something today to say, yeah, we got to have him back, and that didn't happen. It's really going to depend on what else is available out there, because they're not coming back with just Nick Foles and Tyler Bray. That much we know. 312-644.
Well, we do know Tyler Bray is going to come back, because he always does.
I mean, you talk about a guy. He is the only 47-year-old first-year player in the history of the NFL.
That's amazing. He's been there longer, many more years than I was.
I'll go all the way back to, we had a very strange beginning of this season where prior to training camp even opened, we being the media were forced to drive to Decatur, Illinois for no particular reason other than a promotional event for the Bears. Only way we would get to talk to Ryan Pace. And I asked Ryan at that press conference that day, because it hadn't been established yet, did Tyler Bray, how could he possibly have any practice squad eligibility left? And that was before they changed the rules because of the pandemic. And I don't understand it, but now, of course, the rules were different this year. We'll see what they are next year. To Pat's point, yeah, he seems to be a guy that that Matt Nagy can't live without. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, 312-644-6767. I believe Joe out in DeKalb is next up on the phones. Joe, thanks for giving us a call. How you doing?
Hey, Hub. How's it going? Thank you for taking my call. I think there's two topics, Hub, I'd like to run by you and Patrick. One is I think we had been a little bit bullish on the performance of the offensive line the last few weeks, particularly with the young guys up front. So I'm just wondering, Hub, you know, if your perception has changed, you know, with the result today, with the performance of Mustafa and Bars, if we could build upon that going forward. And secondly, with more for Patrick, you know, given his length and great performance in the league and given the unsportsmanlike penalties called today, I struggle, you know, playing football and coaching football. Is, you know, that a individual situation, or is that something that coaching can really have somewhat of an influence on, such a impact on the overall game today? So thank you, guys, and you know, long suffering Bear fan, and let's hope better days are ahead.
Well, Joe, thank you for the phone call, and I'm going to defer to Pat's expertise on this. He played the position in the NFL. I will just say that with two youngsters, and they really are, Alex Bars and Sam Mustafa, each now have about, you know, what, 8-9 games of NFL experience. I'm not going to judge them off of one game, and I also wouldn't even attempt to answer your question without getting a chance to watch the tape and go back and see their performance, because, you know, you're focused on so many things as you're watching a game today and getting ready to talk to you guys about it. So, no, nothing changed in my opinion of them tonight. I do think the Bears found something there, and it will help them in evaluations during the off season. As far as the unsportsmanlike stuff and the getting, you know, pulled off sides repeatedly by Breeze and even Taysom Hill, Pat, I had a coach back in college who said, I can't coach stupid, you know, and
heard that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that Anthony Miller is stupid, but what he did today was incredibly
stupid. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then as far as the encroachment calls, that's not stupid. That's getting caught up in the emotion of the game, the scale of the game, the excitement of the moment. And I know the coaches have done everything they can to get these guys not to do that. And so, no, I'm not going to put that one on the coaches either.
Yeah, and I'll speak about Mustafa and Bars. This week and then last week, they went against much better talent than they had the weeks prior. My evaluation right now of them, and this isn't a knock, this is actually a good thing, is they're very serviceable NFL linemen, and that you can play a long time that way. And like you said, they're young, so there is improvement that can be had, but I see both of them having a chance to play a long time in the NFL. I don't know if they're Pro Bowl caliber players, but not all players are, obviously, but I see something there. I see, you know, guys that can play in this league for a while, and I see guys that can be on it. If they continue to improve a little bit more, they can be on an offensive line as a starter for a long time in the league and you know, play next to a Pro Bowler or do all that kind of stuff. But I see some ability there, and I think the Bears have two good young players that hopefully can get better. But right now, if they just stay at this level and slowly improve, they might have a long NFL career. And then as far as the unsportsmanlike conduct and coaching that, from what I've seen of players that play with that fire and always on that edge, that is part of coaching that has to work with a kid to deal with that. You know, how to harness that, when you can let it go and when you cannot let it go, and do what Mike Fury did, is talk to him before the game. You're talking about Javon Wims before, but there's only so much you can do. You got to tell them and remind them, but you can't hold their hand, literally hold their hand and not have them punch. But that is up to coaching too. You've got to learn your player. You've got to learn their personality. You've got to learn how to harness that fire. And a lot of coaches were successful with some of the guys I played with. There were a couple other guys I'm sure you know and could mention. I'm not going to mention their name, Hub, that were in our locker room towards the end of my career, where they made some dumb mistakes like that. But you got to learn how to coach that fire, and that can be part of coaching. And like I said earlier, the offsides penalties, that's always to me on the player. You've got to know that discipline. That's from Pee Wee League. I mean, that's anybody knows that. That's the one where you ran laps as a kid. I mean, you're probably not going to be running laps in the pros. I know some coaches have done it to players, but to me, that one's on the players.
Yeah, and I'll go the other way, because Pat mentions, you know, guys that we've seen come through that locker room over the last, 20-some years now, 16 years that Pat played. And I'm not going to name any names, but there were a lot of guys who obviously were really stupid. I mean, mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but I mean, there are a lot of guys in the media who are really stupid too, but they didn't make mistakes like the players I'm talking about didn't make mistakes like that. It's a different kind of mentality, and there's certain players that you have to work with them. And Pat, I'll go a step further. I'll be stunned if Anthony Miller's not a Bear next year. They've got too much invested in him. Basically two twos and a three, if you count what they traded to get him and what they used on him. And he's in the final year of his rookie deal. And so unless somebody wants to overpay for him and give you a four or a five, which I don't think is going to happen, he's probably going to be back, and they'll take a crack at it. I cannot understand how Javon Wims would be back. That's a different story, and in part because I think he's done with his rookie deal. We'll see what happens with that as well. Let's see, whose turn is it? I think it is Brad, who is in Gardner, Illinois. Brad, how you doing? Have we got Brad?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, Brad. Go ahead.
All right, good deal. So a few things. If they bring Nagy back, they have to get a new OC. They got to get a new DC. And if they keep Nagy, they have to have the OC calling plays. I think Nagy's a good head coach. I just think he's a horrible offensive coordinator. And I honestly think he's been calling the plays the last 2 weeks. That's my first thing. And again, it's an honor to be on here with Pat and Hub. But that's my first thought. Pace, I'm not really sure about. He's probably the one that's going to go. I think you bring Mitch back, because I rather go with Mitch than Foles. And I know you have the guaranteed money, and I know that he's going to be there, but I rather play with Mitch and Romo and whoever the main guy was, say Nance or whoever it was, said that they've been coaching the running part out of his game the last 3 years. It hasn't been the last 3 years. It's been since he hurt his shoulder against Detroit or whoever it was when they went to the playoffs in 18. And ever since then, it's like they're afraid to let him just do his thing until Laser took over. So that's all I had to say. I hope that, we have a good team to watch next year, and it was an honor being on with you guys.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for the kind words and for the phone call. My nature is I have a huge problem with conspiracy theories, but especially in today's world, I have a huge problem with it. Matt Nagy has not been calling the plays the last 2 weeks, okay? He is the head coach. He can overrule or change any call that he wants. He is intimately involved in the game plan and the scripting of the first 15 to 25 plays, so there's no question that he's got a heavy involvement in it. But he has not been calling the plays the last 2 weeks. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I don't necessarily disagree with you about the offensive coordinator side. Bill Lazor is a great guy. I've enjoyed working with him this year. I don't know that I'd have a problem if he's back next year, but I wasn't overly impressed with the hire, and I'm not overly impressed with anything I've seen this year. So I wouldn't have an issue with that one way or the other. But, Pat, I strongly disagree with Brad on Chuck Pagano. Chuck Pagano is a hell of a football coach, and he had an excellent game plan today. They executed it almost to perfection for three quarters. I don't know why. People are mad at Chuck Pagano for not being Vic Fangio. There's only one Vic Fangio.
Right.
And so, no, I completely disagree on Pagano, but I, you know, Brad may be onto something with the offensive staff. It would be kind of, you know, unusual to have that much turnover on an offensive staff 2 years in a row, but I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it either.
Yeah, just to me, the part of the problem, or the main problem with the offense, is the quarterback position, because you don't have anything to work with to really build an offense around. You know, you've tried two different offenses with Mitch. You put Nick Foles in there, and it still didn't work. We had trouble with the offensive line. David Montgomery started to play a little bit better. Anthony Miller, we've talked about, regressed. Obviously, you have Allen Robinson. Darnell Mooney got a little bit better. But you put all those pieces together, and it's hard to find an identity. And like I said, they tried running two different offenses and it didn't work. So I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I think it would be, might be refreshing for Matt Nagy. Well, I guess he's gone through a couple guys, but to bring somebody else in to help him out a little bit. And the defense, yeah, the defense is a tough one, because your superstar players had down years, and quite a few of them had down years. You know, Khalil Mack didn't have the sacks that you wanted. Akeem Hicks didn't have, as a dominating year as he's had in the past. I thought he had a good year. And then obviously Eddie Jackson not getting the interceptions and making game-changing plays. So that to me is on the players. Like I've said, there's things that's up to coaching and there's things up to players. I felt like the players didn't tackle well, and that's on them as well. And then to go back, he gave a couple questions. To go back to about Mitch Trubisky coaching the running out of him, 100% I think they did, because they wanted him to learn to run Matt Nagy's offense and be able to sit in the pocket and process information. And we saw how that went. He just can't do that. We see that on third downs now, even in this new quote-unquote, well, it's going to be old now, the old offense of last year at the end of the year, where he couldn't process information. But, Hub, your point, too, earlier about the game plan, I was not good. I didn't like the game plan going into this either, because that's something we talked about in the pregame, was having Mitch use his legs, you know, have him use the zone read more and get out on the corner, have him just say, hey, pull the ball down on third or on pass plays when you see man-to-man and they're not spying you, go ahead and get those yards. But I guess that's a long-winded answer to a long-winded question, but that's all I've got.
And Ben Roethlisberger just got picked again. In fairness to him, the last two are deflected balls, but still, this is like a real comedy. Pat, I firmly agree and believe that they have coached the legs out of Mitch, and I think that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. I understand why they did it in the beginning, but the fact that they haven't recognized it and gotten back to it, and they've given up one of his and their best weapons, I find very frustrating. I got to ask you about one other guy. I take no joy in pointing out or criticizing anybody, but again, it's part of our job. For all the talk that we've had about Eddie Jackson this year, did he play his worst game of the season today? I mean, that it was stunning to me. I just the Michael Thomas touchdown. I don't know what exactly the coverage was, but it was clearly zone. He lined up over Thomas in the slot and proceeded to drop 3 or 4 yards deep in the end zone, then watch him catch a touchdown pass in front of him. And that was just one of about half a dozen plays that I don't know what he's doing out there anymore.
No, and that's what's amazing to me is how good he was. He was a game plan changer for offensive coordinators in the past, and this year, his play has probably slipped the most of anybody on the team, and it's probably by a wide margin. It's not good, because that's what the defense was based on, you know, the takeaways and turnovers and his play. And his play has dropped not only in the takeaway department, but tackling, coverage. You know, he was always known to be a pretty darn good cover safety and be the athlete he is. And we just, his season, probably, yeah, if you look back on it, his season was the most disappointing as far as what you expected out of him, who he's been in the past, and what he put on film this year.
And what's so unfortunate about it is the only answer we can look to, Because he's a good guy, and he was a great football player, and this is insulting what I'm about to say, but it's all we have, he got paid. You know, he got generational wealth. He became a multi-millionaire, and he stopped producing. And there's nothing else for us to look at right now. And so hopefully some off-season soul searching and some work on that, and he can become an all-pro again. There's no reason to believe he can't. But, man, he was just awful today. We are going to take a very quick commercial break. We'll get back to your calls in just a minute. Pat and I have about, 20, 25 minutes left in our season. And with our Prop Swap postgame show presented by PNC Bank, we will then be handing it off to Big Ann, Anthony Heron, and our buddy Olin Kreutz are in for the postgame show. I normally am a little worn out by the time that Pat and I sign off, but I can't wait to hear Olin tonight. I will tell you that, Pat. That is something I am looking forward to. So I will be stuck by my radio. You all should be too.
Before we take a quick break, you know what he's really going to rant about is the Ryan Nall run. I can't wait to hear him talk about the Ryan Nall run during the game. The third down, I don't know what the heck that was, but I wanted to text him during the game, but I figured he was probably throwing furniture around at the NBC Sports Chicago set.
I don't know what the hell it was. There was also a fun exchange on Twitter, and I don't know if he saw my tweet, but exactly at the time that I was tweeting, as much as I love Akeem Hicks both on and off the field, I wish he would talk a little less and make more plays. Literally at the same time, Olin was tweeting, "You got to love watching the way Akeem Hicks plays." So I may even call in to ask him about one. Let's see if they open up the phone lines for us. Guys, we are back in just a moment. Pat Manley, I'm Hub Arkish. This is the Prop Swap postgame show presented by PNC Bank at 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Making the playoffs is great, but what we did today has to be a lot better, you know? And so how do we do that? Every year is always going to be a little bit different. That's just a simple fact. Matter of fact, Jason, I just told the guys in the locker room that for us to get better and to be the team that we need to be, that's something that we'll do here in the offseason is make sure that wherever there's a weakness, we make it a strength. And that's going to take everybody. So today wasn't good enough. And you look at a team like the Saints that has been there, done that on the coaching side, player-wise. I think that that's a start for us to realize, hey, if you want to go ahead and do damage in the playoffs, you can see situationally, discipline-wise, all that kind of stuff, how we got to be better. So we have to be better in a lot of different areas, and that's my job is to make sure that that happens, and we got to learn from that. So I would say, every year is a little bit different. Yeah.
Welcome back to our final Prop Swap post-game show segment of the season as the Bears are 21-9 losers to the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans today. To wrap up the 2020 Chicago Bears football season. I'm Hub Arkish along with Patrick Manley. Stay with us, but don't go anywhere when we're done because we've got post-post coming up with Anthony Heron and Olin Kreutz. They'll be taking your calls as well. Pat, I'm going to get back to the phones in a moment, but I'm curious for your take on something that just occurred to me. I'm listening to Matt with a couple of these sound bites that we've heard now of him talking in the post-game press conference. He sounds to me, and I know what his answer was. We had it in the bump about 10, 20 minutes ago. We talked about it earlier this week, too. He has said that there haven't been any conversations, that they don't worry about it until after the season. But just listening to his answers and the tone in his voice, he sounds to me like a guy who knows he's going to be back. And I think if he knows he's going to be back, that they know Ryan Pace is going to be back, too. Now, this has been my sense all along that it was the most likely outcome, particularly getting into the playoffs, however you want to say they got in. But that's just kind of what I'm hearing. I'm curious if there's any chance you might even agree with that.
No, that perked my ear as well, hearing him talk that way, not just really what he talked about, because sometimes to me, you know, after games like that or situations that you're in where there is a possible firing, the coach speak sounds different. You know what I mean? You hear different cliches, a different tone. And he sounded very comfortable and confident that he was going to be back. And obviously that could be different, but that's what it sounded like to me. And that's funny you said that, because that perked my ear too. I'm like, wait a minute, that sounds like he's really comfortable walking into Hallis Hall tomorrow morning and addressing the team going forward. So that was an interesting soundbite there.
Yeah, I'm not calling him a fibber, if you will. I think he says what he's got to say, But that's just kind of what I'm hearing in his tone there. So we've got Joe, Russ, Gus, and Ken. Let's see if we can get to everybody in the next 10, 15 minutes. Joe is out in Homewood. Joe, how you doing?
Listening to you for a long time, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
Listen, I've been a Bears fan for 45 years, so believe me, it pains me to even think or say these things. We have one of the five worst organizations and coaching staff in the league. At best, this 8-8 record could have very easily been 6-10. And I hope that you agree with that. When Matt Nagy won Coach of the Year, he won Coach of the Year because Fangio was there, that defense was stellar, and they let Mitch use his legs. I got one question for you, and it comes down to the coaching on offense. How is it when we're third and short, we pull out Montgomery and let Brian Nall run the ball? And with that, thanks for all the years of listening.
Well, Joe, thank you very much. I know you're frustrated, and I hear what you're saying, but they're actually, this season at least, one of the 15 best teams in the NFL. The Miami Dolphins were better and didn't make the playoffs from the AFC. But other than that, by any measurement we have, you know, 14 teams in the playoffs. So I don't know how they can be one of the five worst organizations and yet be in the upper half of the league. That's number one. And number two, you can make the argument that 8-8 could have just as easily been 6-10 with a couple plays, but it also could have just as easily been 10-6 with a couple plays. So I'm not going to make the argument either way. They're 8-8. That's who they are, you know, and they were in the playoffs, and that's who they are. So, you know, you may be right in your frustration with the people running the team, and maybe they should have been better, but Pat, I mean, you know, again, you are what your record says you are.
No, and it's true. And then, you know, you've mentioned it that, you know, Matt Nagy has now gone to 2 playoffs in 3 years. And yes, the rules have changed this year to get the extra team in. So that's proof there. They're not one of the five worst organizations in football. So we're kind of in no man's land right now of trying to figure out where we want to go to get better. But they're not one of the worst teams. I was just starting to write down some teams that I was thinking about. And I'm like, well, the answer is all the teams that have already fired their general manager that did already during the season, that they're in worse situations than the Bears right now. And those teams obviously have less talent than the Bears. I know we want more talent here, but they're not one of the five worst teams in the NFL. I don't agree with that one. And I do agree with them about the Ryan Nall call. I went back over my notes here. They got the ball back with 1:48 to go from the 18-yard line there to get down to 3rd and 2. And they just ran twice with Montgomery, and they put Ryan Nall in. I have no idea why. I hope it's that David Montgomery broke a shoelace or something and he couldn't run. But that, to me, was just that's an awful decision. And then that's one I can replay in my mind. That might have been one where we talked about where Mitch Trubisky should have pulled the ball and ran it. Because if you look at it, it looks like Cam Jordan closes a little bit. The linebacker steps up. Doesn't really scrape, and if he doesn't scrape, then that to me is you pull it and you get those 2 yards and you keep moving the chains and see if you can get lucky and get down there and maybe kick a field goal or, you know, put some points on the board before the end of the half. But to me, that was a bad, bad call, and it looked like to me what I saw so far, a bad read by Mitch.
Yeah, two awful things. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, Ryan caught a few passes. I think it was either his second or third carry of the year. So why that was the
I don't know.
And what sucks even worse, Brad, is that I don't want to be debating whether or not they're one of the five worst teams in the league.
Right.
I want to be debating why they're not one of the five best. So that's kind of where they've left us right now. I'm sorry, I think I said Brad. That was Joe from Homewood. Now we're going to get to Russ in Palos Heights. Russ, how you doing?
Thanks for having me. I beg to differ with you, Hub, about the overall record being a positive record of Nagy. I think his real record is the last 2 years, 16-17. The game plan he had today is proof of that. Second point I want to make is, as far as hiring a general manager and keeping Nagy, I would think that we should maybe consider, the Bears might want to consider something like the Bulls did. They let the new general manager decide who the coaches are going to be, rather than let him be stuck with a guy who's not exhibited exactly a clear path to winning or ever being a guy who can outcoach someone else.
Hey, Russ, real quick before you go. Whoa, before you go, I hope you're still there because you got to answer a question for me. I welcome your right to beg to differ, but I'm trying to understand why Matt Nagy gets blamed for the last 2 years and gets no credit for the first year. And don't tell me Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio was the defensive coordinator on the 3-13 team he took over. So why doesn't he get any credit for the first year?
Well, I don't remember any time where someone lauded him for his scheming and out-coaching someone else in that 12-4. I remember a lot of times where it was talked about how much the defense had made that team a winner.
Well, again, that's true, but with John Fox as the head coach and the same defense and the same coordinator, they were 3-13. With Matt Nagy, they were 12-4. So I get your point, and again, I'm not trying to debate you, but you can't say he doesn't get credit for his first year, but he's going to get blamed for his second and third year. You certainly
I'm
can argue.
That, I'm just saying that the true coaching ability of the man is the last 2 years.
And I'm saying you can't say that because he coached all 3 years. You can say whatever you want. Please don't. Let's not. I don't want to get this going in the wrong direction. Let me hear what Pat has to say about it.
I just want to hear you guys argue a little bit more. That's good radio. No, but you're right. I mean, that is his record, and that's you got to take the totality of it. But then you also have to take the thought of him learning on the job as a young head coach to becoming who he is now. Can he improve? It's like you evaluate a player the same way. You start to see, are there traits here? Is he getting better at doing this? And for him to step away from the play calling and to be able also to keep the team pulling, keep pulling the team forward with him and what he wants to do, that says a lot to me as an evaluator of a head coach. The guys believe in him. And that to me, that just says a lot, because right now he's the CEO and he gave away the play calling duties, and he can surround himself with some better coaches and more talent, and you get that talent and better coaches believing in you. That's how you win ball games, and he's got that ability right now to get the team to believe in him.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to 2018, and people actually were raving about all the trick plays he was writing up and the job he did with Mitch in his second year when Mitch was a Pro Bowl alternate, and had a 95 passer rating and did win some games for him. And so, again, listen, if you're not a Nagy fan, that's fine. You're more than welcome to that opinion. But we have to evaluate him on his total performance. We can't just pick the parts we don't like and say that that's who he is and he doesn't get credit for the rest. Let's get to Gus, who's out in Toronto, up in Toronto, Canada, I guess. Gus, how you doing?
Hey, good, Hub and Pat. Thanks for having me on here. First of all, I guess, Pat, we got to get the long snapper IPA north of the border. I could probably use a couple right now. But
real I got a couple waiting for me as soon as we're off the show.
Perfect. But it's been two huge games in a row here, and the Bears didn't show up where it's counted, which is the second half. So outside of the last second Jimmy touchdown today, the Bears only scored 3 points in the last four quarters with the season on the line against New Orleans and Green Bay. So my question is more for you, Pat, which is based on your experience around halftime adjustments, and I know that there's not that much time in the locker room, but it seems to be a trend rather than an aberration. So just curious in your thoughts, is this a coaching issue or is it really a flaw with the makeup of the roster in that they can compete for a half but then not create any momentum in the second half?
Well, I think there is a lack of talent. I think that's part of it as well. But, yeah, coaching. I mean, I just remember times going into you go into the locker room and there's grease boards on one or two grease boards, one on each side for the defense and offense, and you hear the coaches talk, about what plays work. Are we seeing the fronts that we scouted all week? Are they doing stuff that we scouted all week that we game plan against? Okay, our game plan, we've run these runs, we've run these passes, these aren't working, let's go more to these, let's adjust this. And I don't know if they're doing that, but I saw a lot of coaches successfully do that at halftime on the teams I was with. And that's the process that takes place. But sometimes other coaches are better than other coaches recognizing what needs to be adjusted. So maybe that's part of the problem. But I know they're trying to make adjustments. That's what all coaches do. But some are better than others at making the adjustments and recognizing what needs to be done.
All right, guys, I'll tell you what we're going to do here. We've got a few callers on, but I know that Anthony and Olin would be happy to talk to you guys. And it's not that I don't want to take your calls, but Pat and I are going to be signing off. We will be with you tomorrow. If you want to hear Pat with a chance to have looked at some tape and really analyze this thing, he will be with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahima in the 10 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. I will be with Dan and Layla in the 11 o'clock hour. I just want to take a minute or two, Pat, for us to wrap things up together. The thing I'm going to miss the most about the end of the season is the time that you and Olin and I and Dan and everybody have gotten to hang out. But as we put a cap on this thing as far as our pre- and post-game work this year, you know, just a remarkably volatile season, the ups and the downs and the pleasure of the 5-1 start and the frustration and pain and disappointment of the 6-game losing streak and then the bounce back and then finishing with the Packers and then this one. You know, we've been talking for 18 weeks. I think we know that you believe maybe a change of general manager is the best way to go, possibly not at coach. What about the roster? What do you see happening here? What do you think has to be done to have a different outcome next year?
To me, you know, quarterback is the number one position, and there's no real answer out there because where we're drafting in the draft, you can't say, okay, we can get one of the top three guys or top two guys that look like they'll be potentially good pros. So that's disturbing and tough to deal with. You know, do you bring Mitch back? I just have a hard time because I think you know who he is, and I don't know if you might be able to get something more out of somebody else that maybe fits Matt Nagy's system better. So that to me is the number one question, and I truly don't know how to deal with it. It's just too bad we're in this situation, and that's part of the reason why I feel that I do about Ryan Pace and what he's done and how he set it up. Number two is O-line. You need a left tackle. You just need to keep solidifying that thing. We talked in pregame, you know, building this thing from the trenches, and I'm a big believer in that. I think you look at most of these playoff teams, they all have good offensive lines and good defensive lines. And then defense, the guys just need to do some self-evaluation. We talked about Eddie Jackson, Khalil Mack, and Akeem Hicks, and the playmakers, and Robert Quinn, that this is a time when you're done, you kind of re-self-evaluate. And I know this year was different with COVID and everything, but you say, all right, I need to self-check myself. Did I do everything possible to get myself in the best position, condition, training, mental part, you know, studying the tape, and see if you can come back and be a little bit better next year. And if you can do that, then I think this defense is going to be okay because they've got some playmakers over there, but they've just got to step it up a little bit and go back to playing the way they have, and we have seen them play. But that's the way I feel on the team. I think just tackle and quarterback to me right now are the two biggest positions of need.
Well, and you know, Pat, I'm kind of ambivalent about Mitch at this point. I mean, I'm fine if they do bring him back on a short-term deal. I don't know that it matters much if they don't. I think that Matt Nagy, with an offseason, to do everything he can to try and bring, quote, his offense back, which favors Nick Foles going into next season, if that's the competition anyway. Obviously, they've got to add another quarterback. I do think that, and let's put the salary cap aside. There's nothing we can do about that for the moment. I think it is still critical to get Allen Robinson back.
That's a good point.
You know, he's a 27-year-old Pro Bowl receiver, not a Pro Bowler with the Bears, but, you know, that type of talent. And then the other thing that jumped out at me tonight is I thought that Tayshaun Gibson was the best defensive player on the field. He is a free agent as well. And particularly with the questions about Eddie Jackson, I think they've got to bring him back. And then I think they've got to make a real investment during the offseason in some of these kids, you know, and really commit to them and say, hey, Mustafer, Bars, you know, Mooney, maybe Travis Gibson, Kendall Vildor, Jalen Johnson, you guys are the future. Because what we haven't talked about much is how much better those guys are going to get. And there will be improvement there. And then I think that's kind of what you build around, because it's going to be a veteran defense again next year, and it could still be a very good one with the talent they still have.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, obviously, the money's on the defense, the talent's on the defense, and I think they're going to have to lean heavily on that if they, again, which is unfortunate, but just the big question mark is going to be offense to see how they can fix this, and that's the thing they need to write.
Patrick, I made a special trip on Friday to get me a little more long snapper because I knew I had a feeling writing was going to be tough tonight. So before I try and hit my deadline, I'm going to join in one or two. I cannot tell you how much I have enjoyed the last couple seasons, especially this year. I truly hope that we get to do it together again next year. Mitch, if you're listening, and I know you are, go ahead and send our renewals. We'll sign them tomorrow. I can't speak for Pat, but I will.
It's been a blast, Bob. It really has. Yeah. I just look forward to Sundays and game days and hanging out with you and Olin and you on post game and the callers. It's just a lot of fun to be a retired athlete and still be involved and feel the pulse of Bears fans. It's been a blast.
And it's hard not to be grateful for we're in the playoffs. It sucked. I hated the outcome today. But there's 18 teams that weren't. And so I hope that you have a great offseason. We're going to be talking, obviously.
Sure.
And again, I just want to say once more how much fun this has been, how much of a privilege I consider it. And you have a great evening, and we'll talk again real soon.
All right, you too.
That is Patrick Manley. I also want to give our thanks to Julio Roseo. Our entire production staff here, guys, are just the best. And particularly tonight, you saw why. We come out of this frustrating game. The phones aren't working. Julio Roseo never skips a beat. He keeps us on the air, gets everything fixed, makes it work for us. Julio, thank you so much for an outstanding job. And guys, stay right where you are at because there is some fun coming. I got a hunch that both Anthony and Olin are going to be fired up a little bit. I know I'm going to be listening. It's the post-game show next right here at The Score. And then all day tomorrow, it's a Bears season-ending Monday, not a Bears victory Monday, but it'll be the best sports talk in town. Again, Pat at 10 o'clock with Dan and Layla. I'll be there at 11. Have a great night, everybody, and we'll look forward to staying with you during the offseason. Hopefully next year will be better. I'll say it. Hey, go Bears. They got a whole offseason to fix it now.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.